On Transportation and Economic Development. It is Wednesday, April the 23rd, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing, and I will be open as a subcommittee of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. We will be taking public testimony, and also the consideration, of course, is House Bill 5013, Economic and Community Development. Tap of the gavel will begin as a subcommittee. Mike, you're back.
I'm back.
Good to see you.
Thank you, sir. Chair George, members of the subcommittee, and guest Richardson, I'd like to say hello. Today we are, again, I must pass along the regrets of our director, Marty Brantley, who remains detained in Los Angeles given the Monday night death of his father. Deputy Director Sherry Shung is here. She's recovering, and while not completely recovering, is able to join us today, so I thank her for that. Today, I'm going to talk about a group of programs within the department called that we bundled together and called Community Assistance. There is a Community Assistance tab in your notebook. It's kind of a stretch to group these together because there are some rather different programs in here. However, it is fair to say that they're all about community assistance, and it's fair to say that for the most part, they are targeting rural Oregon. I know that we had some questions related to rural Oregon yesterday, so here's some things that, with the exception of part of the regional investment program, are exclusively available to rural Oregon. They're, from my perspective, they're about creating the capacity in rural Oregon to, as we discussed yesterday, set the table for economic development. These programs have a large degree of flexibility and variety because the barriers to economic development vary from community to community in Oregon. I think a lot of people are critical of the department because we try to be all things to all people. I think you can get to being lots of different things if you keep your eye on the goal, which is to enable the creation of jobs by businesses in throughout Oregon. That means a lot of different things in a lot of different places. So there are things happening in these programs that raise people's eyebrows. I find that on those rare occasions when I actually am able to get out of Salem and go sit down with these boards, these groups of community leaders who are dealing with difficult problems, fundamental changes in the agricultural environment, fundamental shift in the economics of the timber economy, the former basis and continued basis for economies in these parts of the state, that I'm reassured. I find that these are good people, community leaders who are facing these problems. They're taking shots in the dark because they really don't know the answer. But I believe that these people are motivated to solve these problems and are trying to be creative about ways to do that. This part of the department's budget is about enabling them to accomplish those ends. There are really four programs in this mix, and I'm going to deal with one of them just quickly. One of them is a federally funded program called Old Growth Diversification. The department gets an annual grant from the Forest Service. We don't know how long that's going to continue. We're projecting at least another year. The reason it's critical to the budget is because while it is federally funded, it does take staffing effort. In this program, we deliver services directly to communities. The other three programs are funded legislatively. They're part of our direct lottery budget. And we're going to spend time going through each of them separately. So that's kind of going to be the format. We're going to go through this format for the rest that we've used for the rest of the presentation, but I'm going to break it down and do it piece by piece for each of these programs. The goals for the upcoming biennium for all of these programs are to focus on job creation. I need to remind you of a comment I made yesterday. In rural Oregon, that's always been the target. Rural Oregon has still not recovered from the decline of the forest products industry in the early 80s. And for this part of our partnership, our customer base, it's always been the goal. While it may not look like it from time to time, because in some places they're trying to fix up the downtown, in some places they're trying to provide for the next batch of leaders, and there's not a clear and direct link to economic development, if you ask these people, they'll tell you that it's all about being prepared, being ready to for their community to host business creation and growth. So try to keep that in mind as we listen to what folks have to say. I suggested that we're making a focus of these programs. We're doing that statutorily. One of the programs that we're going to hear about today, the Regional Rural Investment Program, has in the past, by the legislative direction, been pretty wide open in terms of what gets done. As I said, these folks are focused on job creation, so it's not a stretch for them to support with us House Bill 2300, which, among other things, makes it a statutory requirement that a significant part of their investment will be driven toward job creation. I've facilitated a couple meetings with these partners, and they're wholeheartedly in support of those amendments, which will be coming to you. The bill's been referred to this committee, but will be coming to you. And again, there's absolute agreement that we need to be focused on that sort of activity. So in terms of our targets, to simplify accounting, to simplify the department's role related to these activities, we're going to go to standard reporting. In the past, each region's had the authority to identify its performance outcomes, its benchmark. That's a statutory authority that's been given to them. They've agreed in our discussions that to facilitate their reporting and our staffing of that effort, we're going to use standard reports, standard measures of success, which will include short and long-term job creation and leverage from the project dollars that they spend, and then long-term leverage on those same projects. So we're essentially going to have four required performance measures, and they will all be reporting those in a standard format.
If I could interrupt for just a second. Mm-hmm. That is also the direction that was recommended by the consultant that was hired to look at the economic development programs. A specific concern was regional and rural, which the state spends the money but historically has not had any particular oversight over how those dollars were spent and any kind of reporting on the outcomes. And so about a half of the community development lottery funds were going out without any real state control over how those, what kind of impact those dollars had on the economy.
Chair George, members of the committee, I'll continue. The statutory direction for these various programs is varied and in different parts of our statute. It's very clear also on each of these that the department will, in the case of regional rural in this instance, largely make sure that discretion is at the local level. There is a very sketchy state framework that we're amending, the 2300 would change, but basically the legislature says the resources to be at local discretion, the department won't interfere with that. So that's what I want to highlight related to regional and rural investment programs. And in general, that program and the other two that are legislatively funded are managed the same way by the department as we move to how do we carry out this work. The department does not have a direct role in delivering the services. We primarily do that through contractors, either regional boards or partnerships, or through a couple of other service providers, which are Rural Development Initiatives and the Oregon Downtown Development Association. Representatives of those groups will come up to speak to you in a few minutes. As a result of that, the department doesn't use a lot of staff effort to deliver these programs. Most of the staff effort that is involved here is related to old growth development, under which we do deliver projects directly. But again, as we talk about further budget reductions, further staffing reductions, we've got to find ways to make this work better, and that's part of the impetus in our discussions and statutory changes to get the standard reporting requirements, et cetera. The total program services budget or staffing effort within our budget is just under $2 million at $1.9. The community development fund or program funding for these things is approximately $9.5 million per the governor's balanced budget. Now, there's been a lot of concern generated in the last week with the co-chair's budget and the governor's new budget because the co-chair's budget would reduce approximately half of the program funding for the department, which will necessarily impact these programs. The governor's budget specifically identifies one of these programs, regional rural investment, as a target for reductions. I need to tell you that at the beginning of this biennium, regional rural investments had a total legislatively approved budget of $20.6 million. Through special session reductions, that was reduced. The legislatively funded part of that was reduced to about $13.5 million. The department had about $1.8 million of recaptured money in that program through money that was not spent by the regions in the past or interest earnings, because in the last biennium there was a wholesale change to the program. It took the regions a while to get going, so the department held the money for a while and accrued interest on that. We backfilled the shortfall or the reductions to the, so that the program was effectively somewhat in excess of $15 million. That's the level the program's been delivered at in this biennium. As we move into the biennial planning, with the focus, the demand for the department to get more focused on job creation, the department has negotiated further reductions with the regional boards, which took the regional and rural investment program funding down to $9 million. We did agree that some of the job creation resource would be operated jointly with the boards, with the regions, and I'm calling it the partnership reserve fund, but essentially a component of the strategic reserve, $2 million, would be dedicated toward joint projects between the department and the various regions that would have an immediate job creation impact. So the negotiated agreement has been something in excess of $11 million, which is comparable to the all-time low in this program. At that level, regions complained. Some regions only got $400,000. The metro region got $1 million. $1 million doesn't buy you much in the Portland vicinity these days. So people complained. These local leaders who make up the boards complained about the level of funding, but they still came to the table. We're concerned that if we cut much below that level, it stops being relevant, that there's just not enough money. I need to make it clear that the legislature funds the department's budget. The commission then allocates components within that. I think we've got our work cut out for us to maintain what I think are important programs that deal with important local issues and still accomplish the objectives set out before us in the upcoming biennium. I'm going to stay close by and I'm willing to answer questions, but I really need to yield the floor to the people who care the most about this program, and I'm going to invite several representatives of those boards to come to the table.
Senator Morris has a question.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the $1.9 million in program services, what portion of that is a flow through to, or is there any portion that's a flow through to other expenses?
Chair George, Senator Morris, that's essentially our staffing effort related to this. We have about 8 people involved in delivering the services, negotiating with the subcontractors, making sure that what happens is consistent with the law, consistent with the legislative direction, and in the case of old growth development, actually delivering program dollars. But none of that flows through to the regions. The program development fund resource, or the community development fund resource, which is $9.5 million more or less, 9.6 in the governor's balanced budget, is all passed through to the service providers. Primarily, something $9,044,000 to regional boards, $600,000 divided between rural development initiatives and Oregon Downtown Development Association. So that's the money that goes to the service providers.
He's in charge, so if he wants to ask questions, it's okay.
Whatever he wants. Are there further questions of me at this time? Then I would yield the floor to representatives of the counties.
Tony Sherlock.
I would call Mike MacArthur, Dave Glotti, Tanya Dowson, Colleen Padilla. I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves, and we'll try to keep the ball rolling since we have a full agenda.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike MacArthur. I'm the county judge in Sherman County, Oregon. I'm also the representative of the Association of Oregon Counties, chair of the Community Development Steering Committee, among other things. I've been working in economic development, economic and community development, ever since I was elected 11 years ago in Sherman County. Often, if I may digress a little bit toward the philosophical about economic development, the question I hear asked is, why is the government involved in economic development? Why are we, the government can't create jobs? And essentially, I agree with that. The government doesn't create jobs unless they directly hire folks, which we do from time to time. But I think what our government role is in economic development is essentially to set the table, to eliminate obstacles, to help business, facilitate businesses so that they can do what they need to do. Interestingly enough, in 1985, the people of the state of Oregon said that the government ought to be involved in creating jobs and created the lottery. And they said the lottery should be dedicated to economic development. And back in 85 and in 87, during the Goldschmidt administration, we created what was known as the Regional Strategies Program. And that program has been around since, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about regional and rural. That program's evolved significantly, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that later, but I'd like to call your attention to a paper that I've handed out that says at the top, Economic Revitalization Project Report. And what we've tried to do with this report is to focus on what it is economic development ought to be doing. There's been a lot of discussion about what we ought to be investing in and focused on. These principles, I think, talk about what real economic development is. There are a number of different areas in which you can call community development, social, political, natural, and economic. But without the job creation, without the economic portion, none of the rest of those are possible, because the economic portion is that which creates the income which for which you can fund other things. And that's the circumstances we find ourselves in now, trying to fund other things and not having the income to do that. Real economic development is creation of primary jobs, and primary jobs are defined by jobs which bring money into the community or into the state from some other place. If you're simply circulating money around in the local economy, you're not creating new wealth. So primary jobs need to be focused on how you create new wealth in that community. There's great competition around the country and around internationally, in fact, for economic development. We have to be able to compete nationally and internationally to locate primary jobs or to create primary jobs. We have to have certain tools in place. And I think those tools are bulleted under number six there. We have to have a political atmosphere that's conducive to growth and job creation. We have to be able to we have to base our decisions on planning, which is based on research. We have to have a product. In other words, we have to have a place for businesses to be if they want to be in our community. That's being covered in the Governor's Industrial Lands Task Force, which I'm representing the counties on, and we're looking at one of some of those obstacles right now for creating more places for businesses to be. We need to have partnerships with financial providers. We need to be able to provide the financing that businesses might need to locate in our communities. And further, we need to be positioned. We need to be proactive in marketing ourselves and our communities to those who would provide jobs. These are the principles the Association of Oregon Counties believe should operate our economic development programs. We've adopted these principles. We believe that they should drive all the state investment in economic development in the future. To that end, we've offered, in partnership with the department, amendments to House Bill 2300, which you'll be hearing here later. And in those amendments are these performance measures, which are listed below. Those are the things that the investments in the regional boards that are making those investments should be held to. Staff Robin Lamont referred to those being too loose in the past. We agree that these are the principles and these are the measures that should be in place, and we will agree to adhere to those in the regional measurements. I do want to say that boards do report. Boards have plans that are approved prior to making investments in the regional or rural. The reporting is quite extensive. Here's a summary that Mr. Burton gave me of the projects and their investments and how they've been reported to the department and the number of jobs that have been created. So we think that tightening the parameters of these programs by adopting House Bill 2300 with these amendments offered by Association of Counties and having regions adopt the principles in their plans that we listed here will give us the focus that people seem to think is necessary right now to create the types of primary jobs that are really going to help our economy and create the income so that we can do the other things that we want to do in the economy. ALC's position is that we supported the Community Development Fund at $25.9 million. Now, thanks to the co-chair's budget and or the governor's budget, that's been significantly reduced. We don't believe that those reductions are wise We believe that we're disinvesting in Oregon, that we're shooting ourselves in the foot, frankly, that we need to reinvest now in order to keep the engine going, if you will, of economic development, rather than this disinvestment that's been recommended in these budgets, which we think will further damage Oregon's economy at this point. I calculated that at the level of funding that is available for the Lower John Day Partnership, which I chair the Regional Investment Board there, that's Sherman, Wasco, Gillum, Wheeler counties, and the tribes of Warm Springs, we'll have about $25,000 a year to do job creation in our county, or each of our counties will have about that much at the level of investment you're talking about now. So, you know, that's about enough to buy a bus ticket to send people to Portland to look for a job, if you ask me. So we think that working with the department has been successful. We've seen steady improvement in the department over the years that I've been involved with them. I think there's great leadership there. We think they're doing what needs to be done in the way of economic development. We think they need to be given the tools to do that. So we support the Community Development Fund and hope that it's it can be restored in some manner here. We think that regional rural is really the grassroots part of economic development. Actually, the reason I'm sitting here, the reason I'm a county judge in Sherman County, is because I got involved in government through the Regional Strategies Program because of a project I was interested in. And I think it helps develop people. Those programs develop people in local communities, and it gets starts a democratic process. And like many democratic processes, sometimes that's a little messy. And people have to learn how best to operate and how best to make investments. And sometimes those learning steps can look a little awkward. I think we need to grow our economy from the inside, especially in rural Oregon. We can't count on people coming here to save us. They're coming here from outside to invest here. We have to take people who have ideas, who have entrepreneurship, and help them, give them the tools they need to be able to grow a business or expand a business in Oregon. I think the regional programs help do that. It's the other tools that are there in the community development system do that. In many parts of Oregon, the small business development system doesn't work, and so it has to be helped by the regional, the business development has to be helped by the regional rural programs. We need these problem-solving dollars that remove obstacles that keep jobs from being created. Basically, what I think we're doing is setting the table so that businesses can come here and locate. I think it's real important that we maintain at least at the level that we're talking about here, if not trying to find a way to enhance this budget. And that's our goal, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, committee members. My name is Tanya Douse, and I'm here representing Klamath and Lake Counties region. We're served by the South Central Oregon Regional Investment Board, and we're here in particular because we're very concerned about the budget for the Economic Development Department, and we are certainly most concerned about the Regional and Rural Investment Program. We view this program as our most important tool for economic development in Klamath and Lake Counties. I thought it would be nice to share with you an example of how we've used this program in the past. And our projects have been very focused on job creation in Klamath and Lake Counties. We have never varied from that target. We previously had used a piece of this funding to invest in electroscientific industries. And locating ESI in Klamath Falls, we partnered with the department to provide the facilitation necessary to bring that company to Klamath Falls, which has been a very important move for economic development. In turn, for our small investment, ESI has promised to create and is well on their way to fulfilling their promise, 200 jobs for Klamath Falls, and had invested a $10 million facility in our area and started an industrial park by OIT that would be the kind of the groundwork for a future in high-tech industry and diversified opportunities around OIT and our efforts there. We have a long list of direct job creation projects for Klamath and Lake County, and I won't give you all the details, but our portfolio projects has been very focused on job creation. In addition to job creation, we've also invested some of the resources strategically to targeted marketing efforts, and that's the only source of money that we have available to do those kinds of things. We firmly believe that this program is so important to us because the state department could not do economic development if they didn't have professional local partners out here in Klamath and Lake County to help facilitate the effort. We're the ones that know about our industrial sites. We're the ones that know about our infrastructure. We're the ones that know about all the siting and permitting processes that are required, and we know how to get the companies to the locals that are necessary to make this happen. In this economic climate, we strongly believe this is not the time to eliminate or reduce this program, and we just urge you to reconsider the proposed budget, and we would welcome a clear focus on job creation, and we support the efforts that are going on through AOC and what Judge MacArthur has mentioned. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm Colleen Padilla, representing Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development. I serve as the staff for the Jackson and Josephine Regional Investment Board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. We also agree with the points that have been made already that the regional investment program is vital in our community in Southern Oregon. We already look to it primarily for an opportunity to create jobs, indirect jobs. The governor's executive orders that recently came out for streamlining the permit process and the industrial lands, those are programs that we strongly support and are already implementing. And without the regional investment funds, that might be severely hampered. So we strongly encourage not that this program would not dip below what the governor has already proposed in his budget. I would like to share with you one success story from the previous biennium with Rogue Community College, which is has campuses in both Jackson and Josephine County. I just processed a draw request for them from the Regional Investment Program, in which they provided a report where they already, and during this biennium, they have trained 303 students, of which 34 of those were new hires. These are the types of programs that we support that we believe directly link to job creation and providing the environment where we can bring in new companies to our area. I would also note that our regional investment board has already developed its plan for the next biennium, which focuses strongly on job creation and saving jobs, and also on the streamlining the permit process, industrial lands, and getting lands ready for that company that may consider Jackson or Josephine County. And I think that's all. Any questions? Thank you.
I don't think I need the microphone.
It depends on our
I do. Okay, I'll
move up
the table here.
Move up close to the mic.
Members of the committee, my name is Dave Galati. Now, I'm here this morning representing the 44-member governments that constitute the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, which includes Marion and Polk and Yamhill counties. I also wanted to let you know, as these good folks have, that there's unanimity among all of the members in our region about the value of the regional and rural investment program and the tremendous impact that it has had in our region. Now, if I look back over the last 10 years, I note the fact that we've used these funds to provide more than $2 million to food processors, nurseries, wineries, and other agricultural businesses, and matching marketing grants to help them expand their sales into new markets. We've generated over $14 million in investments by doing that in China, Mexico, Japan, the eastern United States, and other places as a result of these grants. We've also invested in new farm worker housing and other strategic industry projects, such as seed money for the Oregon Garden in Silverton, as well as the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. In the last several years, we've shifted our focus. Our local leaders have shifted their focus to provide funds for new projects, including siting municipal water system reservoirs and other improvements in basic infrastructure. I just want you to know that the Regional and Rural Investment Program is unique because it is flexible and because it empowers local officials to tackle in a very strategic way the opportunities that are there and the barriers that need to be addressed to make those types of improvements. if I can, I'd like to just maybe end by offering you a little bit of an analogy. We all know that nothing in nature grows from the top down. If we look at Oregon as being a tree, then all of our local communities are the roots of that tree. And when you strengthen the roots, you strengthen the whole tree. If you weaken the roots, you risk the possibility that that tree will die or that it'll fall over in a stiff wind. Please do all that you can to preserve and, if possible, enhance the regional and rural investment program. Thank you for your time. Are there any questions of me?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Galati, one thing that comes up in consideration of funds being spent in the rural level is the relationship between the money spent and actual economic development and jobs. And so while it is laudable to have money be spent for a bypass project or something like that, and although I have not gone into detail and looked at what that project really was, there is sometimes a disconnect or a great distance between economic development and money being spent on infrastructure projects that could enhance the community or could make it more desirable so that there may be more jobs available in the future. And so I know one thing, and I'm not part of the committee, but as just an interested legislator, I am looking at, and I know others are as well, is money being spent for economic development that will create primary jobs, and money being spent that is nice for the community to have and may in the future sometime benefit the creation of jobs. And sometimes there's a pretty good gap there.
Chair Morris, Representative Richardson, I'd like to address that. I was going to wrap up by touching on the results of this program over the last biennium and this one. The results are incomplete in this biennium because the last report we got that Mike has in his hand was through the end of December, at which point two-thirds of $15 million had been invested. And I believe that the job creation results are understated because the reality is you make an investment that's supposed to lead to job creation. It usually takes a while for a business to adjust to its new market potential. But given that the regional boards have been addressing a wide range of barriers, they've produced results on the order of one job for each $10,000 invested. And we believe that with the new focus, we'll be able to get to one job for each $5,000 invested at the minimum. Additionally, for each dollar of regional or rural investment funds that the boards have invested, they've been able to leverage $5 from other sources. So for the $10 million that's been invested so far in this biennium, they're reporting $50 million of total investment, and we expect to see the additional $5 million producing the same sort of result. We expect that to continue in the future. I think that gets to your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there other invited testimony?
Chair Morris, and I'm going to ask Judge MacArthur to remain at the table because while I think we could go on about this subject for a long time, this is a fraction of the people who called me in the last couple of days needing to be at this table to talk to you. We need to move on to a couple of other programs. One of those is a program that was created as part of the department about 15 years ago. It's the Rural Development Initiatives Program. It was within the department. The department at that time elected with the then manager of the program to spin it outside the department so that it could access grant resources over and above legislatively provided resources. The program was traditionally funded on a line item basis by the budget at about the level of $1 million per biennium. At this point, the budget is roughly half that, or $495,000, I believe, for this biennium. Because of reductions in the governor's balanced budget, we're proposing that it be funded on a proportional basis with Oregon Downtown Development at the level of $330,000. The result of those reductions is that we won't be getting the kind of results we've gotten in the past because we're not paying for them. However, I think this is a critical piece. The statutory premise behind rural development initiatives was that we don't have competent leadership in rural Oregon, and the state needs to play a role in in addressing that. I don't believe that to be the case. My belief is that because there are many fewer people in rural Oregon, there's not a lot of depth to the leadership. That when Judge MacArthur and many of you step down from your roles as leaders in rural communities, that we need to be positioned to have some sort of succession, somebody to step up and take your place. I think that's harder to do in rural Oregon just because there are fewer people, but I believe it's possible. So through its contract with Rural Development Initiative, the department facilitates rural leadership training, facilitates the development of regional or local strategic plans on a community-by-community basis, and I'd like to turn things over to the chair of Rural Development Initiatives, Mike MacArthur, and staff, the director, Kathy Jaworski, and I'll let them talk about changes they've proposed to get at a more narrow focus on economic development and jobs.
Thank you, Mike and Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am, again, Mike MacArthur, Sherman County Judge, and in this case, Chair of the Board of Rural Development Initiatives, which is a group of varied individuals representing private industry, not-for-profit sector, local government, who are committed to developing in rural areas and helping the state of Oregon. Rural Development Initiatives, under the leadership of our director, Kathy Jaworski, is a nationally recognized leader in community programs, and it's leveraged tremendous amounts of money from other sources. Any sophisticated community economic development program needs its not-for-profit arm. Most counties, many cities have such an organization. This one is the state of Oregon's, because many private foundations won't give money to public entities. So this organization is able to go to the private foundations and leverage those to provide programs that solve problems in rural communities and provide that leadership component that Mike was talking about. So I'd like to turn it over now to Kathy, our director.
Thank you. Good morning, committee members. RDI really works at the front end of the economic development continuum in terms of working with very small communities and preparing them for economic development. And in the remarks that were made earlier about the Association of Counties agenda in terms of the focus it supports for the state's economic development investments, there are three of those five elements that I think RDI's work really addresses, and that is the issue of the political environment in small communities for economic development. We do leadership training and skill building and access to networks and information for rural leaders. The planning component, we do lots of strategic planning with small communities so that they can be clear to companies and to themselves about where they want to go as a community. And product, and we're actually proposing to increase our work in the product area in terms of developing, making land ready for development in rural communities. The planned work that we have for the coming year is to, with the budget that is in the governor's budget right now, which is about $330,000, is to assist six communities with either mill site redevelopment or industrial site analysis and development. We have already done quite a bit of work in this area. We were part of a national pilot, the first rural multi-site pilot for mill site redevelopment, and we want to expand that activity in the coming couple of years. We want to continue to do strategic planning, but in a very narrowly focused way in three communities that have a very specific opportunity or challenge. This will be a major reduction in the amount of strategic planning that we do, that will be very focused on communities that have job creation opportunities. We have been successful in attracting almost $2 million for the next 2 years for leadership training for rural communities. And that means we can shift the bulk of the work we've done on leadership development to other sources, which is why we're incorporated as a nonprofit. So we're going to be able to really focus the state's investment on this very specific shorter-term job creation part of our mission. Finally, I would like to say that in many of the places that we work, we target communities with a population of under 2,500. We work in communities that don't have staff, that don't have access to consultants, and we're often the only available resource. We do partner with the regional organizations, and we try to fill in the places that we can be helpful to them. But it's very, very important that even though these are the small communities, that the investment in economic development keeps continuity, not only in the places that are growing jobs now, but the places that are going to grow the jobs in the future. This is where the land's available. This is where there's labor force. This is where there's lots of interest in economic development. There has been sustained interest in economic development, even during the boom. Those communities haven't boomed. And now, particularly during the recession, is not the time to walk away from them. Our part of the OECD budget is very small with respect to the entire budget. Certainly, we're concerned about other elements of the budget because those are the tools the communities we work with also work with. But we hope that you will consider preserving the investment in the capacity of rural communities to act upon their own destinies, and we're a part of that mission of the department. Anything else you want to add?
Sorry.
Any questions? I do have a handout for you, as if you want that. But it's got a list, in talking about capacity building, it has a list of specific stories of how communities, very small communities, very isolated communities, have grown jobs as a result of the work that they've done with us. So you can see the connection between the economic development and the leadership training that we're talking about. Thanks. Thank you.
Well, I'm almost back on schedule. I'm only a few minutes late. I would like to bring your attention to Oregon Downtown Development Association. Oregon Downtown Development Association has never been a part of the department, but it has been a consistent part of our budget, was, again, in the past, funded on a line-item basis by the legislature. The premise here is, and I can attest to this, having had Lebanon in my region, having had Burns in my region, I know stories of individuals or businesses who went to those places and went home. A doctor didn't even got all the way from Ohio to Burns and didn't show up for a job interview because of the way downtown Burns looked. And it's not just about the way it looks. This is, I think, real straightforward economic development. OBDA helps communities develop plans to revitalize or generate business activity in their downtowns. It's a direct link to economic development. It's a very small part of our budget, moving from about $400,000 in the current biennium to about $270,000, again, as we look at an allocation of the resource that's shared between RDI and ODDA. I would turn it over to the executive director of ODDA, Vicki Duggar.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to sit down and talk to you a little bit for a few minutes about the Oregon Downtown Development Association and our connection to growing business in Oregon. We're a very small nonprofit with lots of activities and lots of success stories. And what I'm going to do first thing is just introduce you to a community partner who's very nicely agreed to come this morning and tell his story. This is Roger Jordan from the city of Dallas, and he can speak to you just a few minutes about the value of ODDA services in his community. And then I'll finish up.
Senator and representatives of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify a little bit about the impact of the ODDA program on our community, Dallas, Oregon, but not only Dallas, Oregon, but other communities throughout the state. I grew up for a while. Pardon?
Identify yourself for the record.
Okay, sure.
And also fess up to what your relationship is to Susie Jordan.
I knew that would get in the record. For the record, I'm Roger Jordan, the city manager in Dallas, and am the husband of Susie Jordan, who apparently spends a lot of time with you guys.
Do you get to correct him often?
No.
So in addition to Dallas, I went to high school in Astoria, so Senator Dukes, I'm very familiar with a number of cities throughout the state, and I speak on behalf of many of my colleagues on the importance of the ODDA program. Actually, just the whole community assistance program, we have an opportunity in Dallas to learn a lot about economic development over the years. As you recall, Caterpillar had a big division here, big plant in Dallas, and it closed and moved those jobs to Mexico. Willamette Industry, now Weyerhaeuser, as you know, had a nice plywood mill there, and they closed and moved those jobs to other products. We had, unfortunately, the largest employer in town burned to the ground, which was an electronic industry. So we've had the opportunity of regenerating our economy several times. And so our community's done a lot of soul searching and strategizing and trying to figure out what does it take to advance economic development. In our particular case, one of the programs, and all three of the programs we talked about here today, we participate in. RDI, we've got a program going with our economic development group. We've got a we've participated in the regional rural strategies and the regional grant program, and we participate in the ODDA. My responsibility today is just to talk to you about a couple of things of the reason that we think, on behalf of my colleagues throughout the state, in other cities, why Oregon Downtown is a really critical part. Actually, our community has been involved in and redeveloping our downtown for a number of years. But as you know, most communities in Oregon, if we really drive in them, and we think of that in Astoria or Dallas or Newport, we think of the downtown area. We really don't think of the community in the sense of shopping centers as really what we identify as the heart of the city. Our comprehensive plan, our citizens, and our community recently made that statement again that the downtown is the heart of the city, and we need to work hard to ensure that we protect that investment and we bring jobs into the downtown area, since we already have sewer, street, water, and services available down there. It would be a waste to, of course, move those out. We believe the ODDA and its approach to using a nonprofit is the approach that we ought to use. It's a small-funded state program that leverages thousands of dollars outside. It's a comprehensive approach. It's not piecemeal. It addresses the economic, physical image, and the organizational issues. Our goal is to strengthen and retain existing businesses, understand existing businesses, and identify business needs and how to recruit new businesses. And that's the niche of ODDA. That's what they do for us. We use the technical assistance, training, and tools that they provide statewide to all of us to reclaim and revitalize the heart of our community. Again, most people in our community in a recent survey identified the downtown. If they were going to talk about image of the city, they talked about the importance of downtown. Economic revitalization, one of the top things was that. We create jobs in the retail sector, and we want to create those jobs in our heart. So we have used all the services, attended seminars, conferences, the special training, contracted for special studies, and used the special tools and have been active members for over 20 years. We have a business assistance team, a retail marketing analysis, and recently a downtown streetscape, a parking plan, and theme. And the city council has adopted economic development, creation of jobs, as its number one goal. I mean, the fact is, in Oregon, we ought to all be paying attention to that because it's very personal for me. I have a large family with my wife, Susan, and we have two kids that were looking for jobs for a while in Oregon. One of them had to go out of state to find an employment opportunity, and one of them, fortunately, recently found that but was searching to look out of state. We shouldn't do that in Oregon. In our community, Oregon Downtown Development Association is one that builds our community, builds the character of our community, builds new business jobs in the downtown area, retains the jobs we have, and is an integral part of our overall economic development strategy, and so important that the Economic Development Commission has made it its number one goal this year. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you. It is good to hear from partners we work with. I mean, these communities are what ODA is all about, is assisting them with revitalizing their downtown. And as Mike Burton said earlier, that's not, it's more than just image, obviously. If you have a beautiful streetscape and empty stores, what's the point? Nobody's going to be there. And so it's all about having a vibrant, economically viable downtown. Astoria is a great example of a lot of work that's been done over the past 7, 10 years in downtown revitalization.
came from. Thank you.
And Oda has a project right now working with someone there locally to look at existing space in that downtown and how to make it, what's there, what's the zoning, is it ready to go for business, and what are some other issues associated with that. Retail, especially locally owned business, is so important to local economies and to the state economy as a whole. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics says retail trade is the number two industry in the United States. You can go on the website. Very important. Now, really focusing this down sort of with a very narrow focus and looking at downtowns, primarily downtowns are the place to grow small business. They are where you find entrepreneurs who are just maybe starting their business, you know, in their home, and then they launch out. The first place they go is downtown. So let me just give you a couple of statistics about the importance of locally grown businesses. So for every dollar that you spend in a retail establishment, if you go into a small locally owned business, 60 cents of that dollar stays in the community to recirculate and recirculate and recirculate again. If you go into a chain store, 20 cents of the dollar does. If you go into what you call a big box superstore, only 6 cents of the dollar does. So you can see just the importance of having that much larger piece of the, you know, that dollar stay and recirculate to the community. Also, what I'd like to talk about as far as OTA services is that we do take a very holistic look at downtown revitalization. And saying that, on the business end piece of that, we develop tools and guides. We've done this handbook called Downtown Market Analysis and Business Recruitment Made Easy. So it probably should say made easier. It's never easy. But this really leads communities through the whole process of how to go about doing this, looking at what your target market is, how do they spend money. We also do studies in communities, and I brought some along to Madras, Cornelius, Retail Analysis and Business Development Program. What's missing? What's there? How do the people, how has your economy and your local market changed in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years? Are they spending money differently? What are the psychographics? What kind of businesses can be recruited into that downtown that have the greatest chance of success? And that's, these kinds of plans are what we're helping communities, you know, pull the information together, and then through workshops, really training them on getting on the ground and not just retaining the kinds of businesses that are complementary to their existing downtown mix, but strengthening what's there. So we have a great little program. We have a very small staff of 2 people. We work statewide. If you look at our little handouts, we have amazing numbers. And how we accomplish this is that we're very lean and efficient. We're a nonprofit. My board of directors said, we want you to be as lean and efficient as possible. We build teams of fabulous professional contractors, architects, business mix specialists, parking, you know, analysts. And because we're a nonprofit, they're able to give, they give us a lower rate. They give us great service. They love OTA's mission, and we have them tell us that. So that's a leverage right there. And we really tailor these teams to each community's needs. So we urge your support of this and other community assistance programs. As you can see by the very testimony this morning, it really is the whole big picture of how to really move these communities along. And it is about having vibrant economies with good livability as part of that. So any questions? Correct.
Who's your board of directors?
Pardon me?
Who's your board of directors?
Who are some of them?
All of them.
And that's one piece I didn't put in. We have Wes Hare, who's city manager from LeGrand. Peter Wilcox, who's Multnomah County Housing out of Portland. We have Charlie LaTourette, ODS Health Plans. We have... I was like, oh, my gosh, who do we have on our board of directors? We have a couple. We have Ed Gallagher with the Community Solutions team. Oh, thank you. Dan Bartlett from Astoria. City manager. We have Bridget O'Hagan. Thank you, Celia. This is why I bring Celia along. We have Bridget O'Hagan, who's a commercial realtor, who really has that piece of it. We have Karen Swirsky, who's a planner out of Bend. So that's just, we have a statewide. And what we do is we have kind of a matrix set up saying what types of expertise would be good on a board of directors that really does address all different elements of downtown revitalization. So we have housing, you know, retail, development. We have, you know, the government piece. We have, you know, the city piece, city managers, because they come up at it from a different direction. So.
Do you hold public meetings?
Public board meetings?
Yeah, we have public notice and that sort of stuff.
No, because we're, you know, a private nonprofit.
You just have public funding.
We do, but what we do have a public, our annual meetings is public every year. So that's under our bylaws.
State employees?
No, we're a private nonprofit.
Right.
No.
Okay.
We contract with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And out of this last biennium, 44% of our total budget came directly through our contract with them. 39% of our budget came from other sources, but among them included the regional and rural investment funds. So that kind of gives, and then there are other, you know, sources as well.
If I could add to that a little.
Like, they're funded by about three different programs that I'll lead back to you. So
Chair Moore Center,
do the pie chart.
I was gonna suggest that, especially given the interest in the committee of financial reports, both of these agencies produce annual statements. We could get you those. I think it's a good story in terms of the leverage that comes out of this. I would also like to add that both agencies' contracts with the state are performance-based. They deliver the services, document that with us, and then we pay them for the services they've delivered. We've negotiated with each agency a menu of services and associated prices, and that's the basis for our payment. So I think it's an approach that the committee would find acceptable, and would be happy to deliver those statements if it would make a difference to you.
Chair Morse, maybe Mike, you can share with me how do these services differ from the services that are provided by our community development corporations? And I guess help me understand why our community development corporations couldn't contract with the state to provide these services.
Chair Morris, Representative Smith, in the past, and even in this biennium, the agency had, this is a piece of the budget, and I'm forgetting what it's called right now, but it's the community assistance piece. There are two base contracts within that budget, which are the RDI ODDA contracts, as essentially specified by law. There was, and up until recently, a third component, which we called competitive community assistance. That element was intended to provide an open competitive mechanism for these same kinds of services that was available to any service provider in Oregon. As our budget contracted and we were faced with the need to cut in the budget, we eventually eliminated that component and limited ourselves just to the base contracts with these service providers. But we did, in the past, contract with a range of service providers for these same activities. However, it's our experience, and it's been legislative direction, that we essentially have, in a business sense, a preferred provider relationships with these agencies. One of them was part of the department. The other one has been a partner for as long as I can remember. And we believe we get a bigger bang for the buck in this ongoing relationship with them. We had, in fact, been discussing, before we got into the budget process, redesigning some of our services, trying to get
Vicki had suggested a couple of ideas, and as had Kathy, related to more of an economic development focus. With the reduced budget, we're going just with the core services, and we're not adding any new services with ODDA specifically. We're trying to get back to some of the portfolio that RDI delivers that is more focused on those things, but we don't have enough money in the budget to develop new services from either one of these providers.
Mike, has an analysis been done to see if there's overlap between some of the community assistance programs and the small business development centers and the community development corporations? When I look at page 5 of the line of sight of goals and I look at the drivers that are listed, those are very similar to what we've seen with the SBDCs and also, in a way, very similar to what we've seen with housing and community services.
Chair Morris, Representative Smith. In terms of the community development corporations, I don't have a lot of personal experience with those individually. They typically have specialties. They may be into housing. They tend to be of more social service slant and, for the most part, don't directly intersect with the department's mission. That may change because the community development corporations are trying to get positioned to deal with micro-enterprise activities and have, in the past, last couple of sessions, this session and the last one, introduced legislation to that end. In terms of the contrast between these services and the small business development centers, these are mostly community-based. These activities, while ODDA being a good example, or even RDI and their industrial land stuff, are business-related. They're not related to specific businesses. On the other hand, the small business development centers are almost exclusively related to specific businesses and dealing with issues that a business will bring to the center. So I think that's the biggest difference between the two sets of services.
Question. What would really categorize, in your mind, your two greatest successes in the last 2 years?
The two greatest successes, I would say, one of them is kind of in a lump because if you look on page 2 of the little handout that has the ODDA logo, you can see since 1998 how our service delivery has just gone up, up. And I think, to me, just the number of resource teams completed January 98 to December 02, that's a success. Communities, if this weren't working, this would not be going this way. They're very happy. And so the number completed and the results coming out of that. From Coquille, just over a year ago, we did a downtown resource team, and I called Ann Steves the other day to see how things were going down there. How's it going? Your community-based work that you did here with the downtown resource team was the catalyst that turned our downtown around. In 1 year, we've had 6 businesses open up in our downtown because we now have a plan. We now have a roadmap on that businesses are saying, now that you know where you're going, we're willing to invest in your downtown. We're willing to come in. And I think those kinds of stories, and that's just one sample, are, you know, the numbers of jobs completed and then the successes.
I could comment just one thing. I really encourage the committee and the legislature to take a look at partnerships. And one of the partnerships you've got in economic development is local government. So to say to the state, let's create a department and go out and tell these communities how to make those improvements doesn't work. To leave them alone out there to create their own jobs doesn't work. It really is a true partnership. And one of the things our city council, and I appreciate you sitting through meetings like this, because at night I sit through with the city council similar meetings all the time about what are we going to do about very similar issues that you're dealing with. And one of the things we're dealing with as our budget gets tighter, too, is outside contracts. To look at the nonprofit sector to say, can you do what we're doing without the governmental red tapes and more effectively? And we're using those nonprofit contracts with some performance standards to really perform services at an accelerated level and let them be more innovative and open. So I think ODDA typifies that. It's a nonprofit contract with performance standards. And I can tell you, when Dallas looks around for somebody to help us revitalize the business area and create jobs downtown, ODA was the only one we really thought about, the Main Street program. So I encourage the legislature to use the partnership with local government and creating economic development, because alone either one of us can't do it. And together we can. And to look at nonprofit groups and contracting out as a means of kind of working outside of the box of the traditional government, where everybody has to work for the state or the city or the county. I think this year in our budget we've done substantial work in trying to eliminate duplication and allow others to be involved in the ballgame of creating that. Our Economic Development Commission is like that. It's outside. It's a partnership between the business and the governmental sector, and it does have the same restrictions on open meetings and stuff because we place that on there, but it does allow for a lot more innovation than would otherwise be created inside the bureaucracy of City Hall.
If I might add to that, Mr. Jordan brings up an important point, and I've actually had debates with staff of both agencies about this. And I think they consider it to be a good thing that Philomath or Sweet Home is coming back yet again. But from the state's perspective, I'm saying, so why are we doing Philomath or Sweet Home yet again? You know, we've been there a number of times. We made investments. And the conclusion that I came to, the lesson I learned in those conversations, is there is a state role, that even as a community matures and gains experience and develops its own expertise, problems will arise. There will be a turnover in leadership. There will be new folks coming in. So there is a higher level of service that might be provided over time as a community gains maturity. Additionally, the point that Mr. Jordan reminded me of is many communities are dealing with variations of the same issue. It's not necessary for them to start from scratch and reinvent the wheel and work their way through the maze. And this is true of regional boards as well as these service providers. The state can provide some expertise because the state has experience in all of these places at once. We are involved in Coquille. We're involved in Sweet Home and Philomath and Burns, and through both directly and through our service providers. And we can help people say, well, over there they tried this, and it worked this way. They were dealing with something a little bit different, or it didn't work, so you might want to adjust this thing. And I think there's an ongoing state role in these things to get to results quicker, more efficiently, because we do bring in that external perspective.
Thank you, Chair Morris. I'm struggling still a little bit. With two employees, I don't know how anyone or any organization who would be able to effectively provide adequate outreach throughout the entire state. I struggle with that. And so I guess as I read through this handout, I'm split. Either there needs to be much, much closer collaboration or much, much greater segregation, because when I read through this, I see a lot of overlap, and I see a lot of ways where other partners could be picking up some of this responsibility. I look at the quarterly newsletter talking about updates to communities on grants and educational opportunities. I receive probably four different newsletters a month from the state, from my development corporation, from here. I know the SBDC's put them out. I know Housing and Community Services puts them out. And so I'm struggling here. With two employees, I want to see the biggest bang for the buck. And I don't know how you get there.
Representative Smith, members of the committee, we've got to change gears. I'm going to try to answer this, and I'm going to ask these guys to stick around for an opportunity to speak back to this after Chair Isselman speaks. But I think there's a role for the – I know that there's a role for the state in that effort. The state does a lot of outreach. Primarily what our staff do relative to RDI and ODDA is we are out in the communities. We've got people all over the state. We encounter communities trying to deal with these issues. Our role is to plug them into these entities. We're trying to make that more streamlined, more effective.
quicker on the approval process because we have to essentially enter into a contract each time we do this. But we provide the connection.
Let me ask a question right here. So with two employees, what happens when a person in Huntington, Oregon, the city, the mayor of Huntington calls up and says, we want assistance with downtown, what have you? How can two employees who are located in Salem provide adequate service to Huntington, Oregon, and provide service throughout the rest of the state?
I'm going to let Vicki answer this after I start, because I want to get we have to move on. But what happens typically is the department hears first from Huntington, and actually in Huntington, I don't think we're doing anything with ODDA, but we are with RDI. The department hears from the community. We go talk to them and try to understand what their need is. And depending on what the need is, we might plug them in with either of these service providers. We might plug them into a local economic development group. What depends on what's going on, the Small Business Development Center, whatever's happening. If it turns out to be an Oregon Downtown Development Association, we'll connect with Vicki and Celia. We'll start talking about what the community is. We'll facilitate a meeting. We'll enter into an agreement. As Vicki suggests, they don't deliver all of the services but with the two people on staff. Typically, they have a cadre of service providers, which can include, I've handed a note by Kathy, they often work with community development corporations indirectly on a contract basis. They work with consultants. Our contract will be the basis for them entering into further agreements to address the specific issue that Huntington's trying to deal with.
Thank you.
So they're more facilitators in this.
Thank you for coming.
I have news, unfortunately, but I'd like to just answer that directly as a city, which is the one that they're providing service to. The reason we know that is because of the background we have about the system. We do not expect ODDA to be out to our door to tell us what to do. That is the State Economic Development Department, and they have representatives that come out when we, or the Community Solutions Team or whoever's, when they identify that, we know if it's a downtown development problem, we call ODDA. They're not issues that need to be dealt with in a day or 2 days, and we build that in our work program. And that's how cities connect. And we have never had any problem because the two people, I see that as a good thing. Because you don't have a bureaucracy that's justifying what they're doing and needing programs. You have that in a contract mode where they're there to facilitate, to get us people that are experts in the field to provide our need. No one person could be skilled in all those areas. So that's what we do. We just look at them as a coordinator, a facilitator in this area. And if there were people like that in each of the areas, in our opinion, we really don't need experts all the time at the state to come out and tell us what to do. What we need is them to tell us what's there and how to get that resource and how to help us find somebody who's already done it or facilitate the process. So the infrastructure of a big bureaucracy to us isn't an important thing.
I'm going to ask them to stay around to the end of the meeting. I'm going to ask that if you have further questions and we can't deal with them today, that they come back since neither of them is far away. But we've got to move on to Sherry's.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, while the other folks are coming up, there have been questions raised about state reporting process and the issue of balance sheets and that kind of thing. So I have made arrangements with John Radford, who's the state controller, to have a meeting with any members of the committee who are interested to talk about the budget development process, the expenditure planning process, the auditing process of expenditures, and the final reporting process. So those members who are interested, if you would please let me know, I will make arrangements to schedule a meeting with him.
And that would be in this hearing?
My plan was to have something informal in a conference room, but if the entire committee is interested, then we've got a quorum issue, and then I would suggest having it as part of the
informal would be preferable.
Okay.
There are other members of Ways and Means, the full joint committee, that would have a great deal of interest in that meeting as well.
Okay.
And with the concurrence of Senator George, to extend that invitation to the others.
I will do that. I will
pass.
I think it would
be a very enlightening
Okay.
Issue.
I'll pass that along to my boss and see if we can set up something for whoever on Ways and Means.
Because there are questions with respect to funds, balances, restrictions. That there's a lot of issues that I think that would be an excellent opportunity to pursue.
Great. I will see what I can do to get that done.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Sherry Shine, Deputy Director with Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. With me is Jack Isselman, who is the newly appointed chair to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Commission. As you know, the commission sets the policy direction for the department's work. And earlier today, you heard testimonies from a lot of people who have concerns about the funding level for the regional rural investment program, of which it is a part of the community development fund for the department. I just want to reemphasize, it is the commission that in fact is in the hot seat in deciding how much money goes into each area of the programs in the community development fund, and regional rural is one of them, but the others are business development programs, of which strategic reserve funds and industry sector outreach funds are major portions. We also have a line item for a small and emerging business service. You heard earlier presentations about the small business service program using primarily small business development centers and a number of contractors to target small and women and minority-owned businesses. All of those are basically program areas within the community development fund. The legislature's decision is how much money in aggregate goes into the community development fund, that's new resources. And for this current biennium, the department's request is just under $26 million. Half of that would go into business development programs for deal closing funds we need or for industry sector development. And the rest would be distributed among regional rural investment. The department proposed $9 million. And small business service, that's roughly $3 million. And then a very small amount, $600,000, into community assistance. So that's kind of a context and a quick summary of what are we talking about. Out of the $369 million total budget request for the department, really the major decisions the legislative body is asked to make are how much new lottery monies would you choose to put into the community development fund, and more than half of that from the department's proposal is invested in business development. And then in addition, once you make those decisions, we also have a request for roughly about $16 million in lottery fund for staffing. And if you take away some of the program money, then we will be able to make commensurate adjustments in the staffing requirements. All the other monies are really basically done deals, because the rest of the lottery money is for debt service associated with lottery bonds that are already issued or are to be issued in the next month, and we can't negotiate on whether we will pay debt service. So that's, as you remember, $50 million. That's already a given, more than half of the total lottery requests we're making. And the other funds and federal funds, basically, while they are budget decisions, do not affect what you care about as limited resources in general fund and lottery fund to the state. So with that, I'm going to introduce Jack Isselman, who presided over a fairly extensive discussion over the department's refocused budget in February, because as you know, after the new governor and new director came in, we went to work and asked ourselves, with the budget resources that's been identified in the governor's proposal, is that the best way for us to support the direction that we have received and the vision we hear from Marty Brantley? And our answer initially is no, it does not. We really need to refocus, which is why our budget proposal continued to show this word refocus toward job creation, toward immediate economic development.
After the staff has done the work, we pull together the information and run it by the commission to get a reality check. And Jack presided over that meeting. So at this point, I'll hand it over to Jack so you're able to hear the kind of the vision and the mandates and charges that we have received from our commission.
Okay. Well,
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Before Mr. Isselman began, I'd like to welcome him to the legislature and his new position as chairman of the board for Oregon Economic Development Department, and wish you great vision and success in your efforts to lead us to different and hopefully greater outcomes.
Well, thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate that. And I will state for the record that sitting here today was the first time that Ms. Shang disclosed to me that I would be on the hot seat, so it was probably in an effort to coax my attendance. And we unfortunately are not joined by our esteemed director, Marty Brantley, today. Oh, I'm sorry, Jack Isselman, Isselmann. Marty is with his family in California. His father passed away earlier in the week, and I know, absent that family commitment, he wanted to very much to be here today, in part to make sure I didn't undo the weeks of good work that's been done already. And as I understand my role here today, I'm basically coming out of the bullpen as a closer to underscore the messages that you've heard through the several days of testimony. And like any good closer, you rely heavily on your starters and middle relief. And I will say that in my short time being affiliated with the department, I have been at many times impressed and amazed by the level of commitment and dedication that the professionals at the Economic Development Department bring to their job every day. They are wonderful public servants to the state of Oregon, and should be commended for all of their efforts, not the least of which were directed in recent weeks towards putting this budget together and putting these fine presentations together that have been made before you. In terms of policy, I mean, you've heard it already, but to kind of give you my perspective on it and a little bit about my involvement, Marty Brantley and I were asked by then-Governor-elect Kulongoski to serve on his transition team shortly after the election in November, and we were given the task of evaluating the Economic Development Department. Worked closely with then-Interim Director Katie Koba, and Marty managed to find his way, wittingly or not, into a job running the department. And I know the governor was very grateful that he agreed to serve in that role and engage in the refocusing. And we found a very receptive group in the department when we arrived. And under Katie Koba's stewardship, a lot of our thinking was already starting to germinate at the department. And so consequently, I think we were maybe several steps ahead of where we hoped we would be in terms of refocusing the department. But at a very basic level, Marty and I looked at it, looked at the budget, looked at how it had kind of been managed historically, particularly in the more recent biennium, and felt if we continued down this path, we were going to, in essence, be eating our seed corn, and we were going to have insufficient resources to go out and do what we believe the citizens of Oregon really need from their Economic Development Department at this point in time, given the demands on our public finance system, and that's creating jobs that generate income that can generate revenue to the state. When I'm not serving in this role, I love to have policy debates about the state's public finance system and the great ideas I have to fix it, but that's not, I believe, the role of the commission or the role of the agency. Our role is to try to find a way to enhance the economy of Oregon generally and hopefully in so doing improve the revenue picture for state government. And so our focus has been squarely on jobs. And Marty has years of experience in terms of growing and expanding businesses, looking for places to locate businesses, looking for ways to reinvent businesses, and has brought that expertise to bear in his role as director. I have much less experience, but at ESI did have the fortunate occasion to work with some excellent economic development professionals down in Klamath County when we sited a 50,000 square foot manufacturing facility there in 2000. And our experience there has been an excellent one through some very difficult times in our industry. And we're very satisfied with the workforce we have there, and I feel privileged to call them my coworkers. So it's that range of experiences that Marty and I brought to our considerations of the budget, and certainly the governor and his experiences serving in prior administrations had a viewpoint that what made sense in terms of being able to be opportunistic, and we compete not only against 50 other states, but countries around the world in terms of economic development opportunities, it made sense to be as flexible with that economic resource as was reasonably possible. And we feel the budget we have architected achieves that. It does come at the expense of other initiatives. And given the state revenue picture that's happening in budgets that are being reviewed throughout this building. I'm certainly prepared to answer questions as to why we set our priorities the way we did. As there was room for disagreement when we hashed out this budget internally, there's room for disagreement as we move forward. But we believe we put together a responsible budget and one that's best suited to address the needs of the Oregon economy at this point in time.
Thank you, Jack. Questions?
Yes. Ms. Sisselman, what list of criteria did you use in determining potential cuts? I think you were advised by the governor to look at a 10% reduction. Is that right?
I think that's right. Yeah, initially.
What criteria you used in determining how or why you would cut what?
Well, the first thing we looked at is where there were pass-throughs in the department. And some of these pass-throughs are required because of federal pass-throughs and, you know, channel deepening. I mean, we can't do anything about that. They're coming through our department. It's a federal initiative, and they have to be done that way. Other pass-throughs, though, were pass-throughs from the legislature that, in our view, were just handoffs of money without, we felt, a proper accountability back to the department. Our feeling was if the dollars were coming out of our budget, we should know, you know, what they're being spent on and should at least have some understanding of the vision of the organizations to whom we were passing this money on to. So that was a key focus area for us, where we could tighten accountability in a time of limited revenues. And then, you know, frankly, where there were opportunities to redirect some of those pass-throughs, we felt in a way that would be more consistent with the objectives we were setting for the department, we attempted to do that. So I would say that was kind of the prevailing view. And then you started to fall out into subsets pretty quickly about, you know, how does the department need to be structured if we're going in this direction, and you know, various other organizational issues, both on a project basis, on a people basis, kind of came out, stemmed off of that general analysis.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Okay, wow. That wasn't too hot. I'll come back.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I may, Sherry Shine with the department. I just want to augment a little bit the response to Senator Carter's question. If we're talking about how did the department prepare its refocused budget,
I would say the guidelines were very few and focused on immediate job impact. There was really one single criteria upon which we looked at: how do we marshal our staff now? What are the resource allocations? And are there flexibility or options for us to tweak or redirect those? And in both areas, the refocused budget really go back to how can we maximize the immediate impact on job creation. Even though we're not in the business of creating jobs, we do work with lots and lots of businesses and industries to help facilitate job creation or job retention. And that was across the board the priority. If we're talking about in budget reductions, what are the criteria and the methodology used? I would say job creation was the first one, but through that, we did a calculation of cost per job. And that's the cost of new lottery monies for each projected job impact that we had shown in this budget. And using that, we came up with a priority list of our programs, which you have heard presentations of in the last 2 weeks.
Philosophically, I should say to both of you that if the department doesn't see its role in terms of job creation, I think that you're going to be in the hot seat the next time you come here.
Amen.
Because legislators are going to be saying that, and I think that's one of the problems. That one of the best kept secrets is that small communities, as they do job development, they talk about the things they do. They don't tell us how many jobs were created as a result of that. And so that means that responsibility is yours. And so unless you can make them responsible, accountable in terms of how the money is being spent and how many jobs created as a result of it, I think you're going to have a rub right there. And that's not a good one at all, as other directors have said in the past. It's not a good one. And you see these people up here being real quiet? Don't underestimate them. So you can see where I am.
And I think just to clarify, Senator, I mean, when we say we're not in the business of job, I mean, the only jobs we directly create are over on Summer Street in
Absolutely.
Our department. And
Absolutely.
That's not where we believe. We have some great people working there in great jobs, but we don't believe that's the growth strategy.
Since you are the accountable party,
yep.
That's what I'm saying. You're in the business of seeing that monies that flow from you and go into smaller communities are creating jobs. Otherwise, all of us lose if that is not happening. The other one is that when you look at your cuts, are you maximizing opportunities for those rural communities to have those persons in the field? Once before, one of the greatest rubs, and probably one of the bad things about me being here is I have a history since 1985. Okay, so it's like an elephant. One of the other things that happened before that is not very good, and that is when the department did cuts, it did not cut much internally and cut externally, and counties came unglued because you took away some of their field people who really, really are on the ground in those communities helping them to do what they need to do. How do you plan to keep from letting that happen again?
Well, that's not going to happen. If we're entering a new era at the department, I would characterize it as the era of the RDO, where there are regional development officers, there are feet on the street, there are eyes and ears. I mean, they're important to us at a fundamental level in achieving our mission. But they also, I think, have a very important political/civic objective, which is it's really how state government touches its people. I've gone out on a few economic development trips, some with the governor, some with the department, have met a number of these regional development officers. I mean, these guys are good, guys and gals are good, and they just need to be empowered, and they need their lives simplified. I mean, they're out there trying to cut deals. They don't even know what they've got to play with. And so and that's what we're trying to do with the strategic reserve fund. You know, the governor will set up very clear, measurable mandates, and then we'll tell them as it runs down what the money we have on the table for them to commit, and you know what we're willing to commit to certain types of projects.
Back to your experience in Klamath Falls, you'll do well with that kind of perspective.
Yeah, no, and we had a great experience both with our state RDO, Larry Holtzgang, and then they have an excellent regional team down there, Team Klamath, a guy by the name of Trey Sen heads that up, and I still remain in close contact with him, and really energetic guy. He moved up. He's a bit of an odd duck. He moved up here from Atlanta, so he's running around down there with a Georgia accent, and but has completely fit into the community. So it's he's a real resource.
Jack, in our earlier discussions, I suggested that the strategic fund level proposed was low, in my opinion. What kind of discussions have you had internally with respect to that?
We'd like it to be larger, and if we could get appropriations in that direction, we would surely take them, because we think we could. But they would have to be new appropriations, because we felt, given the commitments of the department, and there's some commitments that are, I mean, as Sherry said, I mean, we've spent the lottery bonding, and that debt service is fixed. So, and a number of the federal projects that we're committed to, and certainly Sherry can speak to it with a lot more articulation than I can, but are fixed. So we felt that increasing it to about the $13, $14 million level was the most reasonable thing we could do given our current constraints and commitments. I think you could expect in the future we would look to augment that fund once we prove that we can be successful in managing it. And, you know, that accountability certainly needs to be established first, but we're confident that we can do that, and then as we go forward, come back and ask the legislature, perhaps in future budget periods, to take a look at what we've done with the fund and hopefully agree to enhance it.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Any other invited testimony that we have this morning?
No, we are complete. Thank you very much, members, for listening to all of our interest parties and our partners speaking to their concerns. And what we have offered to the Legislative Fiscal Office is there have been a number of questions raised by committee members. We felt a couple of them probably deserve a little bit more in-depth response than what we have already spoken to. And if it's of interest and benefit to this committee, we would be happy to come back tomorrow with our senior management team and address a number of those issues that could be addressed a little bit further. So we are prepared to come back at this point tomorrow, and then next Monday on, we'll switch over to our sister agencies. As you remember, the Tourism Commission, the Arts Commission, and Film and Video Office are part of our department and are part of the budget proposal as well. And we want to make sure that you have an opportunity to hear from them. So next Monday and Tuesday right now is scheduled for these entities to come back.
Thank you.
Is there
any other matters?
I have one request. You've been doing grants and loans and stuff to local governments and businesses and what have you for about 20 years now. And I'm assuming you've got a decent computer system when I ask this. I'd like a list of how much you've given by year, how much in grants, how much in loans, how many jobs were created each year, top salary and low salary of those jobs, sort of on an average, or not even an average, just top salary and low salary, and how many of those jobs exist today?
We'll do our best. Is the Senator expecting this information tomorrow? We can give you a first pass of this information tomorrow, and maybe we can then talk a little bit about any further reporting that you would like to see.
No, I don't expect it tomorrow. That's a lot to ask.
That's a term project, Senator.
They don't get a term.
Yeah.
However, Senator, I do believe they have most of that information available. So
So my understanding is some of the early stuff was sketchy, and that's why I want to go back that far, though.
Right.
So.
It may not be quite organized the way that you are asking, but I know that they have got, you know, information going back a way. So I think it would be helpful to bring what you've got.
Because the other thing I really want is those early loans were supposed to be repaid into revolving loan funds at the county level. And I'd like to know how many of those revolving loan funds still exist.
Mm-hmm. We'll be happy to bring back what information we can put together tomorrow and take a look at it first. Great.
Before I step down, if I could stick my neck out one last time. I probably regret this, but if I could just give a plug for our sister agencies, the Oregon Arts Commission, I mean, Tourism Arts and the Film and Video Office, but particularly the Arts Commission, which I know is getting a lot of analysis as we go forward in this budget process. This is just me speaking personally as a citizen, although it is a policy perspective I will want the commission to focus on. The arts are not a luxury. They are a vital part of our economic existence in the state. If we underfund this commission, we run the risk of losing it, and we'll be the my understanding is we'll be the only state in the union. And I think there's actually 51 arts commissions because Puerto Rico or Guam or somebody has one. And to me, that just seems so inconsistent with Oregon values. We shouldn't let it happen. So that's my setup. And they're going to come in here and say it with much more articulation and poise and finesse as you would expect from people in the arts community. So,
on Monday.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you very much.